Welcome to Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. I'm your host, Alina Kanner. I'm a certified athletic trainer and a postural restoration trained practitioner. This podcast focuses on bringing you the highest quality information from top individuals in the health and wellness fields across the country and across the globe. Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast was originally established to help people become their own best advocate for their own health. The main goal of this podcast is to bring you actionable tips to restore your own health and wellness, or to optimize your health. Every episode done has a deep purpose to bring forth intelligent humans and help spread their knowledge to the general public. I want to thank you all so much for supporting and listening year after year. For the latest information about the podcast, you can follow on Instagram at MoveYourBB. And starting in 2023, I'll be posting these episodes on YouTube, and the YouTube handle is also at MoveYourBB. Now it's time to welcome the guest. Thank you for listening. Today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, I'm really excited to have Dr. Karen Kelsall. Karen is an Olympic gymnast, and I actually met her on a hike while traveling in Sedona, and I heard a couple people in front of me talking about gymnastics, and I just couldn't not say anything. So I went up to them and started a conversation with them. And it was amazing to me because she actually became a chiropractor and she's practicing in Portland, Oregon. She's been training in gymnastics since she was 9 years old. She ended up competing in college and going to the 1976 Montreal Summer Olympics. And her story is just something I really have never heard of before. She ended up living in New York and being a modern dancer there, and then eventually becoming a chiropractor and starting a family in Oregon. So when I heard her talking about gymnastics, it was something inside of me, an innate connection to her. And I just really felt that her story was so important and had to be brought on this podcast. There's so much to learn from a high-level athlete, especially from an Olympian. I asked her lots of questions about her upbringing, and we really talked deeply about her time in gymnastics, as well as her time training while the Olympics got boycotted. So I felt that this episode was something very different that I've ever had on Move Your BB, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. It's a lot of talk about mental toughness and just life in general. So I really hope that you enjoy this episode. Okay, today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, I'm really excited to welcome Karen Kelsall onto the show. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Alina. Nice to be here.
So it's a really interesting story is that I was hiking in Sedona and I love Sedona. I love Arizona. I love specifically Sedona. I love Sedona. And I heard these two women in front of me talking about like gymnastics and USA gymnastics. So I'm pretty extroverted. I just immediately was like, are you guys talking about gymnastics? And you both were. So can you give me, that's just how we met, right?
Right.
We connected all that, but then I found out a little more about you and I really want to know more. And so I asked you to come on this podcast because you're a very special woman and I want to hear a little bit first. Let's just go into your background and then we'll go into why, you know, you're special and interesting.
Okay. Well, so the connection that brought us together is gymnastics. And so I fell in love with gymnastics when I was young. I started gymnastics when I was 9 in California. And I just love the sport. My mom had to put me in something because I was so hyperactive, destroying the couches and everything. So she was so happy when I found gymnastics because I really came home after working out and was so exhausted. The house was fine, you know. So anyways, but, you know, I excelled pretty quickly and ended up going to the 1976 Olympics. That was the one in Montreal. And I was the youngest competitor there. So I was 13. And, you know, had gone, you know, I was competing for the Canadian team, although I trained in the U.S. And I went from like 25th in Canada, the year of the Olympics, to 3rd in 6 months. Wow. By moving to a different training facility in Eugene, Oregon, where they were producing Olympic gymnasts at the time. It was the National Academy of Artistic Gymnastics. And Dick and Linda Mulvihill. Linda Mulvihill was a 3-time Olympian. And it was a big Olympic training center at the time. And one day in the summer, I just told my mom, I said, I want to go to Eugene because I want to be an Olympic gymnast. And she was on the phone. The next day, We had everything packed and we're driving to Eugene because school was going to start in a week. And I had all my stuff and I didn't even know if I was going to make the team. I had to go for an audition. So I did this 5-hour audition with just me in the gym with the two coaches, the Mulva Hills. And after that, they said, well, we think she's got some talent. So we think she could, we'd like her to stay and she could be on the team and we'll just work with her. And so my parents dropped me off. And it was all my doing. I mean, my mom always said, you know, if ever you want to come home, call me and I'll be there and I'll pick you up if you don't want to do this anymore. So that was always good to know that. But, you know, the training was it's like 6 to 7 hours a day, 6 days a week. It was much more intense than I was used to. And I just accelerated in 6 months and ended up qualifying for the Olympics, placing third on the Canadian team and the top six went to the Olympics. So that's how I got there. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's more after that, though, but that was my first big international competition.
Right. It's so interesting because you were so young. Do you remember this? Like, I mean, I'm sure you have memories, but.
I do. I have some pretty unique memories in that we were trained. So the 1976 Olympics was the year of Nadia Comaneci and she worked with the 710s. And so the Canadian team luckily, had this opportunity to train with the Romanian team. So we stayed at the same hotel and then we used the same training facility, Romanians in the morning, Canadians in the afternoon, evening type thing. And so we spent 3 weeks like with the Romanians in our hotel and everything like that. And so, you know, I had a chance to watch her train and, you know, she was flawless. There was never a mistake.
Really?
But the fun thing is they did get us together one evening and Nadia came up to me and she spoke a little bit of French and I speak a little bit of French. And she wanted to exchange like leotards and things like that. And so we sort of, as a Canadian gymnast, we sort of knit with my friends telling me, you know, bring other stuff besides that. Cause they, you know, they don't have any makeup, you know, they'd love makeup and, you know, whatever. And so we went to her room and I brought her some makeup and she was putting it on and we did a leotard exchange. And then when I was leaving, she said, now, can you get me some candy bars?
Yeah.
They were. And I was like, yes, I can get you candy bars, but I'm, you know, going to need to get you those candy bars and, you know, be careful because, you know, your coach, you know, you're going to get weighed every day and your coach, you know, may have a problem with that. So, you know, so she sort of understood that, I think, but, you know, she hid the candy bars under her bed and ate these candy bars. I don't know when, but, you know, everything was fine, but it was a fun experience with her. And then I also had a great experience with Olga Korbut in that she followed me. The top 36 back then qualified for the next level of competition. And so I qualified for that. And she followed me in each event. So she went after me the whole time. Wow. And so I was the youngest gymnast in the competition. And she was pretty experienced at age 21 at the time. And so she just took me sort of under her wing and made sure that I got my warm-up time. Because you only get like 30 seconds on the beam just to check it out and all that. And so she was just really helpful to me and everything. We didn't speak the same language at all, but she just really made sure that I got my warm up. So that was sort of a fun experience. And then just the last thing is when I did leave the Olympic Village, I did feel like there was just a ton of bricks taken off my shoulders. It was, I didn't realize how much stress I was under, but I wasn't feeling it. It wasn't causing anxiety or anything, but I just remember, you know, leaving Montreal and just feeling, wow, like I feel so much better now that it's all over.
It's so wild. But, it's so interesting. Yeah. Actually, I think I told you when we were on that hike, my dad's first cousin competed in the same Olympics in men's gymnastics.
In what?
Men's gymnastics.
Men's. Oh, okay.
Yep. His name. And in Israel, he's Israeli. And in Israel, everybody has nicknames. Okay. So nickname and what we've always called him is Dubi, which means like bear in Israel.
Okay. Very cool. Bear.
So he competed, but he competed for Israel, but he trained in America.
Yeah.
So similar story. And then he competed there. So I'll call him up and tell him about you. He lives in Israel now.
Wow. Yeah.
Fascinating, right?
Yeah. It's interesting to connect with people who have been, you know, at the same, you know, Olympic Games.
Same Olympic Games. When I was growing up, when I was little, I have them in my house still. He gave me two of his little medals, not like just medals from a meet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I still have them because it was just so exciting for me.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
it's just so interesting. You were really young. You were 13 years old. So yeah. I can't even imagine 13 years old even really experiencing anxiety.
Yeah, I didn't even know what it was really. And I didn't have it, but the only time I realized I felt different was when I was done with the Olympics, because it was such a buildup to it. I think there's so many things that were important, and your food and your rest and, you know, your coaching and where you were at the right time and all this kind of thing. And once I was done with all that, then I just felt like all these bricks had been let go from my shoulders. Yeah. So
what do you think gymnastics has done for the rest of your life? Like, having this sort of a childhood, what do you think, in positive or negative, what do you feel about it?
Well, it's a unique experience. I actually think it's really been more of a positive experience for me. I mean, I had a really positive experience at the Olympic Training Center that I was at in Eugene, where some gymnasts maybe didn't. So for me, it has opened so many doors for me. It's also helped me in my current career in that, you know, I got a full ride scholarship to UC Berkeley and did gymnastics there. So, you know, my parents probably could not have afforded that kind of education for me. And so that was great just to have that academic experience. And the other thing that gymnastics has really done is it has instilled an incredible work ethic. And, you know, basically, you know, there's so many things that go on in our world. And basically, if you set your mind to something, no matter what you have or don't have, you can actually do it. You just have to, you know, want to do it and proceed, you know, just keep working at it, and incremental steps sometimes need to happen. But yeah, so I use my gymnastics every day, and I have a very positive, you know, memory of it, because it do a lot for me. Yeah.
I love that. It's very interesting. So my experience is different. I had a very positive experience, but I wasn't competitive the same way. I started older. And so my experience is extremely positive, and I just love the sport. And what I love about it, and I love this about athletics, it's not necessarily gymnastics, athletics, is that nobody can buy you that title. No one can just hand it to you. You have to work for it. And that's kind of what you just said about work ethic. And it's also very true to life, because things in life, yes, you can have connections and you can, you know, get higher up for some reason. But ultimately, if you work pretty hard, that's going to help.
Yes.
And I think that that is true when it comes to life and career. And I want to talk about what you're doing in your career, because I think it's an interesting thing that you were, you know, high level gymnast, and then now what you're doing. So tell us a little bit about what you do in your career.
Okay. So I'm a chiropractor now, and I'm actually a sports chiropractor as well, but I'm a chiropractor first. I used to be a licensed massage therapist as well, but I'm not currently licensed because I mainly focus on chiropractic. So
fine, you still have the skill set.
Yeah, I still have the skill set. So but now I have LMTs that work for me, and they do the massage and all that, but I do mainly the chiropractic and all the patient interaction, things like that. And the way I got into this is that after my gymnastics career, I pursued a career in modern dance. And I moved to New York City after Berkeley against my mother's will, and pursued a career in modern dance there. And so I got into a company after about a year, a professional modern dance company. And it was a company where it was the exact opposite of ballet. So it was where the women lifted the men, and the women had all the major jumping roles.
Wow.
Okay. And so the artistic director really loved gymnasts, because gymnasts have a lot of upper body strength and they can actually lift like a guy. So I got into this company, and I was, you know, it was like my dream to do this, to, you know, dance professionally in New York. And then we traveled all over the US and things like that too. But I did hurt my shoulder lifting a guy, and I was sent to an orthopedist. The artistic director said, you see this orthopedist, we're concerned about your shoulder. So I went to see this doctor, and, you know, he really didn't do too much for me. He didn't touch my shoulder. He just did some range of motion. And he said, there's nothing we can do about it. You're just going to have to rest for 3 weeks. And that was it. And then, you know, $150 later, which was a lot for a dancer back then. And I had no help. And so my friend said to me, you need to see my chiropractor. I know she could help you. And I was like, okay, because no one else seems to be able to help me. So I went to see this chiropractor, and she was, you know, even smaller than I'm 5'2". She was like even very petite, and she worked with a great massage therapist. And then what she did, and in 3 weeks, she had me my shoulder rehabbed and I was able to go on this big tour. And it was just inspiring for me. And I didn't really even think about pursuing a career in chiropractic right then. But then, you know, I went on with my life and everything. And then one day I was walking down the street in New York City and I was trying to figure out, okay, what's next for me? What do I really want to do? Because I don't want to be a professional dancer in my 40s. So all of a sudden it just came to me. I want to be a chiropractor. I want to be like Edith, my chiropractor. I want to be what she does. So I said, this is 5 years after Berkeley. So I had to go back. I went to Hunter College and did all my pre-med prerequisites there. And then we sort of drove around trying to figure out which chiropractic school to go to. And I ended up in Portland, Oregon, to go to the school here, which is ranked in the top three in the world for chiropractic education. So, and the livability of the city was the other thing that I was looking for. So in 93, moved to Portland and started chiropractic school.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where did you grow up originally? Like, because you just went away when you were 13. So like, where were you originally born? In Canada, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So born in Canada, Vancouver Island, Nanaimo, BC. And then when I was two, my parents moved to California. And that's where I started gymnastics.
Okay.
In California.
And so then a lot of places.
Yeah. So all up and down the West Coast. And then that stint in New York City for about 5 years. Yeah. Which I love.
What? You love New York?
Yeah. In your 20s. It's so fun. All the creative people that you meet. And a lot of my friends went there too. So there was a big group of us from Berkeley, especially from the dance department that went there and pursued careers. So it was a great experience.
Interesting.
I loved it. Yeah.
Also, going from a gymnast to dancer is also interesting because not every gymnast can do that. You have to be a certain type of gymnast to be able to do that, I think.
Yes. Yes, definitely. For sure.
That's not – a lot of gymnasts cannot do that. A lot of gymnasts look like they're robots when they dance.
Yeah. Yeah, because the, you know, just the hands are different and the way you move your body is really different. I was always, though, like I was always known for my grace in gymnastics. Like I always, you know, like I just, my mom had me do a lot of ballet when I was really young. And so, you know, I was one of those gymnasts that they considered, you know, just very nice arms and could make everything look really pretty, you know, that kind of thing.
You must have been because not every gymnast can go become a dancer.
Yes, correct.
And not all dancers can become gymnasts either.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it really, you know, it's a real combination of, you know, all the things that need to come together to get to like the Olympics. Like I even think of the girls that are going now to the Olympics, like, okay, so they can't get injured right before. You can get injured like the last thing you do in warmups. You can get the flu or a cold or something really bad. You could, you know, there's just so many things that have to actually line up for that gymnast to actually be at their peak at the Olympics. It's like a minor miracle.
Peaking is so specific.
Right.
Like, it was funny because earlier today I told you I just watched NCAA Nationals.
Right.
And to watch, you know, some of their top girls are injured and only doing one or two events. And it's like, what a bummer. Like this is the best girl in the country and you can't even watch them because they're injured. Right. And you're right. The stars have to completely align.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. You have to be in the right coaching leading up to it. You have to, they have to know how to cycle your training properly. It's a million different things.
Oh, I know. Yeah. So when I watch, you know, the Olympics, and I like to watch a lot of the events at the Olympics, not just gymnastics, but just to see, you know, someone do, you know, their best performance is like so amazing because so many things have had to line up just for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I don't even think that any true person, even high level athlete, can understand the pressure that would go into something like that. Like where you've done gymnastics your entire life from such a young age. You know, other sports also practice from a very young age. I was an Olympic weightlifter after I did gymnastics and they also practice from a young age. The difference is that there's a difference in hours and there's a difference in age, truly. Like even they're starting at 14, 15 years old, 13 years old. It's different than when you start when you're 8, 7.
Yeah. Or even 5. They're starting something five now. But you know, I was sort of self-taught. I could do walkovers and cartwheels and splits and everything before I even started gymnastics at 9. But I was sort of glad I started at 9 because then I felt like I had more longevity. I wasn't so burned out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. The other thing, we'll go back to your career too, but also gymnastics wise in the like 80s, 70s, 80s, It's a completely different situation than it is today. Like, I've watched the bar routines you guys have done. That's fascinating to me. That's really terrifying to me. Your hips. I don't know how hips would
grasp the bar and then bounce off the bar with your hips. I know. It's crazy.
So this podcast, we talk about movement and we talk about how the brain, you know, understands, you know, moving your brain, moving your body, anything related to science, learning, movement. To explain it for people listening, the way gymnasts in the 80s and 70s used to wrap their whole body around the low bar and then literally slam themselves up into like handstands.
Yeah.
For me today to even fathom what that would feel like.
Right.
That's terrible. Yeah. I did not know how you guys did that.
Yeah. Well, it's a progression. I mean, the coaches would, you know, get a stick figure out and say, well, this is how you're going to hit the bar. And then you absorb it and then bounce back up. And then there was padding that we used on the bar too, you know, just initially, because it's not going to work out right the first time. You're going to hit wrong. You really have to feel the bar and work with the momentum of the bar. You can't work against the bar unless that's when you get bruised everywhere.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But there was a point, like I was at the end of my career. That's when the women started to do the giants on the bars. So, but we weren't moving the bars out yet.
No.
We were still doing it with it where we could wrap the bar and then we do something and then we do a giant, but we'd have to pike through and miss the low bar.
So scary. And
I actually hurt myself. That was my big injury in gymnastics, is doing that. It was right before a big meet that I was supposed to be going to Britain for. And I was going to do a giant and I sort of turned a little bit late. So I didn't pike soon enough to miss the bar. So I landed right on top of the low bar with my feet, with all that momentum, and I tore my ACL. So big injury. It took about a year to come back, but I came back. I had a great surgeon and lots of rehab. And
that's traumatic, though. That's a traumatic ACL tear.
Yeah, it was the whole gym stopped. It was,
I'm sure,
not good.
And on bars, that's so interesting, and not on a landing.
Isn't that amazing?
Interesting.
It was the freakiest accident ever, I think, because it's, you know.
That is so different.
Yeah, so different. Yeah. And it's just because the bars weren't, you know, and then the bars just started to go out. So you don't even have to pike. You just sort of barely miss the bar.
Yeah. Well, now if you're little too, like when the little girls are learning giants now, they don't need to learn that. They could just,
You know,
there's a lot more safety.
Mm-hmm. And the equipment
is so much better.
So much better. Yeah. So much better.
I mean, the caliber, we were talking about this before, the caliber is so high. These girls are doing skills that are like, especially at the elite level, it's like unfathomable to understand. Like Simone Biles, I can't even understand.
I know.
It's amazing. I know.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, their bodies are so much stronger now too, which, you know, I like, because I feel like that's going to prevent injuries too. If you have more muscle mass around a joint where,
Yeah.
You know, in 76, I mean, it's really, really, really lean. You know, yeah. And lots of knee injuries and various things back then, I think.
Well, yeah. When, you know, the muscle mass is very important. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any athlete.
Right.
So important.
Right.
Oh man. So how was your career at Berkeley?
You know, my career was okay at Berkeley. So after 76, I competed internationally for 5 years, basically, or 4 years. And so I was traveling all, you know, there was just the World Championships, World Cup, all sorts of competitions. And, you know, and then we had the boycott in 1980.
So I actually have a question about that.
That would have been, you know, I was ranked 10th in the world at the World Cup shortly before that. And that would have been my peak. Like 76 was, I was just sort of getting started. It was almost like a fluke that I made the team and all of a sudden I was on the team. I was really training for the 80 Olympics. So, but luckily I did make the 76 Olympics.
Yeah.
Because we didn't go in 80.
Right. So that boycott, like really, I think for a sport like gymnastics, where you really have one shot.
Right.
That boycott really ruined it for a lot of people.
It did. And back then, you know, it was sort of rare to have two shots. So luckily I did 76 before 80. But now the gymnasts, you know, they're going to three Olympics. Yeah, I think it's great. So the 80 Olympics, so we boycotted the Olympics, but what happened is the Canadian team got together with a couple other teams that were boycotting and did a tri meet, they call it, with Japan, Switzerland, and Canada. So we all met in Switzerland, Interlaken, and we had this meet, and the Canadian team sent the junior coach, which was awesome. So the junior coach is going with the whole Olympic team. And he gets us there and he says, so, you know, I feel really bad that you guys aren't competing at the Olympics. So this meet is all about, what do you want to do here? If you want to have fun, have fun. Just let me know what you guys want to do. And so we all got together and we're like, well, we want to go. We want someone to take us on a big hike in the Alps. And we want to go snow skiing. And we want to, you know, go to candy stores and eat candy when we want. So he's like, okay, well, I'm going to go hiking guide for us and we'll organize a ski trip. And, you know, you don't have to go to the practices if you don't want to, but you do have to show up at the meet and compete. So whatever you want to do, but this trip is about you and what you want to do.
That's awesome.
And so we still went to the practices, but he took us on all these adventures. We went to the meet, we won the meet. We had this amazing time.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it was really, really nice. It was unexpected. I didn't know that was going to happen. So anyway, so that was a good ending for me. And then I went right to Berkeley after that. And I was slightly burned out, I must say. Went from training 6 or 7 hours a day to 3 hours, 4 days a week. And, you know, so I lost some of my, you know, really high-end skills. And I had some, you know, some weight issues because I wasn't used to eating a regular diet.
Well, because gymnastics is known for, especially back then, it's just known for brutal, brutal diets. I think it's getting better now, but
it is better now. And
years.
Yeah. Say it again.
It's taken years for it.
Oh, I know. Better. Right. But it is much better. So that's good. So my career was okay. I mean, I was the only one that qualified for nationals from the Berkeley team. And I went to Berkeley for the academics, not for the gymnastics. So the team, you know, we had sort of a, you know, the team was sort of a compilation of a number of kids, even from like just regular recreation programs to, you know, competing and, you know, not at an elite level. But I had a great time at Berkeley and I met some amazing people there. And so the career, so my collegiate career was, you know, I still went to nationals, but it wasn't anything like my career before.
Yeah.
No,
that's okay. You got experience, right?
Yeah.
And all these things, like, they lead into what you're doing now. And why, like, we talked a little bit about why you became a chiropractor, but what do you like about the profession that kind of relates to, I guess, being a gymnast? Is there anything in it specifically?
Well, the one thing that I really like about being a chiropractor is it's such a mix of science and art. And, you know, I like that I get to help people. And I like that I get to, like, look at this individual because I'm, you know, one-on-one in a room with people, with a person. And I get to say, okay, what does this person need? And what are the tools I have to help this person? So I can be creative with that. Like, oh, do they need Graston? Or, you know, I'm going to adjust everyone because I'm a chiropractor, of course, but do they need a low force adjustment? Or do they need blocking? Or do they need a manual adjustment? And then, you know, what do they really need? Do that, you know, I really try to just open up as far as really listening to what they're presenting to me. Cause some people just need you to listen to them.
Oh my gosh. This is such a thing. This was a theme for me this week.
Yes.
If you like, just listen to the person's story and you are there with them and you sit in that, that is very healing.
It is. I mean, sometimes I am working on people and I'm like, you know, I don't know how much I'm going to be able to help this person.
Right.
It's very rare, but there are times I'm just I don't know. I don't know if, you know, what I'm doing. And they get up and they'll be like, oh my God.
I know.
I feel so much different.
They're like,
better. And I'm like, and their whole face has changed. Oh God. So I love that science and art of chiropractic. And I get to do that every day. And for me, because of that, I feel like there's a little bit of an endorphin release when I work with people, which is what I used to experience in gymnastics too, you know, when you do a good routine or whatever. So that's sort of fun because I get to do that. You know, I work 3 days a week, so I get to do that. That's what I get to do.
Right.
Which is awesome. Yeah.
I love it. And you're working, so you're in Portland now. So did you stay in Portland after school?
Yeah. I stayed here just because I really liked Portland at the time. And, you know, I just started practicing here and I've been in the same place now for 25 years.
Wow.
And my practice has changed over time. Right now I have staff and people. I have, well, there's a total of 3 chiropractors working in my business and 4 massage therapists. So a group of 7. And yeah, it's a female, you know, all females.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, which is awesome. And yeah, we work out of a beautiful little Victorian right on a very busy street in Portland, Oregon, Northwest 23rd. So that's sort of a fun neighborhood to work in. And yeah, so it's exciting.
So if people want to come and see you in Portland, because I'm sure there are people listening, can you tell us the name of your business? And
yeah, it's called a Kelsol, like my last name, chiropractic clinic. And it is, well, the address, I guess, is what you want.
Or not, you don't, or like okay. Where they can reach you at. What's the, do you have a website?
Yeah, the website. Yeah, the website is kelsolchiropractic.com. And you can, we have online scheduling. You can write a note on there, all that kind of thing. Okay. But yeah.
Specific and for athletes too. You work with a lot of athletes.
I do work with some athletes. Not, I wouldn't say a lot. I work with some, but yeah, but I do have an extra, I'm a certified chiropractic sports physician. And so I have that little additional degree, but you know, what I think is most important is, you know, the experience that I've had in gymnastics has really helped me treat the number of injuries that I work with every day, because I've had so many of these myself.
Yeah. So actually talk about that. What did you, well, you explained about your shoulder, but let's talk a little bit about what injuries you've had and like what helped you as an athlete.
Right.
As ACL, you mentioned.
Well, the ACL I had surgery on and, you know, all the rehab. And, you know, it was interesting back then because my coach was also, so he was really interested in physical therapy. And so he talked to the doctors. And back then in my cast, he said, let's put some cutouts in her cast so we can put electrodes on her quad and her calf so they don't atrophy.
Wow.
I had nine casts on my leg at the time. It used to be like just immobile. They just immobilize your leg.
Yeah.
And then what they did is, this was brand new at the time, they put a hinge. So I had a cast on the thigh, a cast on the lower leg, a hinge, and I could, the hinge would allow me to bend and straighten my leg. So almost like what they do now with a continuous motion, you know, after you have knee surgery. So, you know, so we did that so that, you know, and then he really, we did just a ton of PT and he did a lot of it with me, you know, just made sure that I was doing the right exercises and things like that. So then I've also had a pretty major shoulder injury. And what has really helped, you know, for me, like I'm not the first person, I don't jump to surgery. It's like really a last resort for me.
I agree.
Because it's never the same after surgery. So with my shoulder, although, you know, it, I could have had surgery on, I decided to go into the regenerative medicine route. Wow. And so I had, you know, I did all sorts of PT and, you know, all sorts of stuff beforehand, but then I did go into the regenerative medicine, got some prolotherapy on it.
Love that.
Four treatments once a month. And it was the most effective thing. Cause I felt there's a point when you have such an injury that you're, especially, I don't know, this is what I experienced anyways. And I've heard other people say about it, shoulder injury, is your shoulder feels disconnected from your body. And it just, because it's so injured, you haven't been able to lift it. The neurology's all off. So it's not sucked into your body. It's not part of you. That's just the feeling I would get anyway. So then I got the prolo, and I mean, even my shoulder was killing me after the prolo, because it's injection therapy, right?
Yeah, it's, I know, and, but I swear by it.
Yeah, it's amazing. So my glenohumeral joint felt like it had been sucked into my body. And I was like, oh my God, I have not felt this in so long. Although it wasn't all better, I knew I was headed in the right direction. So I did four prolotherapy treatments. I actually had to hire another chiropractor to actually treat my patients. My shoulder was so sore. So I did all the chart noting and he was my muscle. I had to take like 2 months off and just walk. But
you have to sometimes, if you're struggling with something, you can't let your own health. And I think this is interesting what you're saying about practitioners, because I do it. I see it. I know that we can let ourselves take care of other people all the time.
Oh yeah.
We'll let ourselves do that because we're givers, right? We want to help people. We want them to feel better. And the thing that can be detrimental is what happens when we're struggling, right? We have to take care of ourselves.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's
what... there's one of us. So
you're
the healer, but sometimes the healer needs to heal first to actually heal people. So that's
exactly
really interesting concept.
Yeah. And you know, over the years, I've actually, cause I've done this 25 years now. And so what I've done is now I work every other day for that tissue healing between work days. Cause you know, my job is very physical.
Yeah.
So I had to deal with, you know, having someone else work for me and standing around doing chart notes, boring part of the job, not the fun part of the job. I want to be on the other side. I want to be doing the adjustments. But anyways, and I've had multiple sprained ankles. I've had, Achilles strains. I've had, gastroenteritis. I've hit almost everything. Abdominal, right? On the third Olympic trials, the final Olympic trials, I tore my abdominal muscle.
Oh my God.
That's right, so before. Crazy. And I've had lots of the various injuries that I currently treat. And so just to have that experience with them and all of that.
I'm sure it helps you really relate to people.
Yeah.
Because people are coming to you for similar things. So.
Right. Exactly.
That makes you get better at your job. That is so, your story is so interesting. And I was like, when I heard you guys chatting on the hike, I hung out with you guys the rest of the time.
Oh my God. And then we did those lifts. Remember the guy?
Oh my God. Your friend was so wild. So fun.
Yeah. It was awesome.
Great. It was just so awesome. I was just traveling, just enjoying myself, taking a weekend. And I love hiking. I love Arizona. And to then go walking in this, it was just like a universal thing where
the
universe puts you in line with where you're supposed to be. And I love the sport of gymnastics.
Right.
So much. And to hear you guys then talking about USA Gymnastics, and then I had to say something.
Yeah. And so I was with, Dina, who was the friend I was talking with, she and I haven't seen each other in 40 years or something. Like, we just knew each other when we were teenagers, and, we competed a lot together and stuff like that, but we've been Facebook friends, Instagram friends, and she just invited,
come to Arizona.
We're going to Sedona. And I'm like, that's on my list. And I just turned 60. So this year has been all about saying yes to opportunities that come up. Because in the past, I'd be like, oh no, I have to work. I have to do this, I have to do that. And I just kept saying yes. So in November, I went to Sedona and, met up with a whole group of people there and everything. But, Dina and I, and Dina's, really into, still does acro yoga and all sorts of amazing thing. She's an inspiration to watch on Instagram and Facebook. But anyways, we hadn't really been talking that much about gymnastics until that day that you happened to be in front of us on the trail. And then we finally got into this conversation, and then you happened to be there. Oh my God, it was such
I looked at you too. And I was just thinking, I was like, these two were totally gymnasts. Like, you can tell body types and then your height.
Right. Yeah, and the shoulders.
The shoulders, right? So I'm walking behind you and I was like, said something.
Yeah.
It was just really sweet. And you guys were so welcoming and so sweet. And it made my day. It was so awesome.
Yeah. I mean, gymnasts. Yeah. I mean, even with Dina, I haven't seen her in a long time. It was like, we
look like gymnasts.
Yeah. And we didn't miss a beat. We're just back talking about stuff. And, because we've shared that unique experience, it just connects you, and you can instantly just, have a conversation with someone. So
it's super interesting. It's also great to see that you've gone into a profession that is also very related to what you did as a child. Same for me. I mean, it makes sense. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. You value human movement, value the body and what the body can do, what the brain can tell the body to accomplish. It's awesome. That's why I wanted to have you on here, because this is exactly what we're talking about. We talk about what the body can do and then what the brain can do.
Exactly. And so one thing, speaking of the brain, and one thing, I do work my body up, but I also do one thing that's for my brain.
That's my question.
That I wanted to tell you about.
My last question is, what do you do every day?
Okay.
Sometimes, not every day, it can be whenever, to move your brain and move your body.
Right. So I am a big believer in, you just got to keep moving. You got to keep moving, even though, sometimes you might feel a little stiff or whatever. But as you get older, you have to move intelligently. It's all about intelligent exercise. Because if I go out and just do exercise like I'm a 20-year-old, I'm going to hurt myself and then I can't exercise. So that defeats the purpose. So intelligent exercise is what I try to remember to do. So what I do is, I do Pilates. I used to do Pilates I've been doing Pilates for 15 years. And I used to do it once a week because I did have a pretty bad back injury. And that was the only thing that got me out of it. It took a year, but it really did finally stabilize my back. So then I started doing it once a week. And now I'm just doing it every other week. Private Pilates class on the machines. Nice. And then I weight train with a little bit of 20 minutes of, not a lot of cardio, 20 minutes of cardio on the elliptical, because I don't want to, pound my joints together. And then I do mainly an upper body workout and some core. And then Those are my off days, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I do that. And then in the evening on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have joined a synchronized swimming team.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So I've been doing this for 6 years now, and it's in the evening. So that's my, I do a double workout on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but it's mainly for my brain because it's choreography. And, you know, you have to learn the choreography. And, you know, I grew up with a pool in my backyard, so I'm very comfortable in the water. But it was a big learning curve to go from gymnastics dance to then doing stuff in the water upside down and all of that. There's a, you know, all the technique that they, you know, the different sculling techniques they do. So it took, you know, it took a little bit, but so I do that and I really like it. We go to one competition a year. We go to Masters Nationals.
So cool.
And it's held in different places. You know, this year it's in Arizona.
When is it?
It's usually the third week in October every year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I'm on a team
in Arizona.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. I mean, this pool's an outdoor pool, so that's nice. But I'm on a 50s team where the oldest person on my team is 78.
Wow.
Yeah. And we have one guy on our team. So that's sort of cool too. He's a water polo player. He's younger. He's 20. Yeah. He's just learning synchro. So he's on our team. So I do that for my brain mainly and cardio, because it is a lot of cardio holding your breath like that. Yeah. And then is there anything else I do? Oh, I do yoga once a week. And I also, you know, at least once a week, you know, I have a dog, but I walk her, but I go on a bigger, longer walk with some friends. We started it through COVID, like just meeting in somewhere in Portland, and we go on like a 2-hour walk. So
love it. This yeah, is like, exactly what it's like to be like a lifelong person who takes lifelong athlete or person who just takes care of yourself throughout your life. This is like what I'm all about.
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's important to vary what you do. Like you can't just always do the same thing. You got to challenge your brain, challenge your body, challenge your muscles differently. And that way it creates that balance that is important, especially as you get older.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You already told us how people can reach you. I'm going to put it in the links in this episode.
Okay.
But thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Yeah. Thanks, Alina. I love following you and I love the work you're doing. And one day I'd love, you know, I want to take one of your things or class
we'll
or
plan it. We'll plan it.
Yeah, that'd be great. So great. I love to learn about the body and you do very unique things I've been noticing. So it's very different than what I do, a lot of breath work and things like that. So I'd love to learn about that. I mean,
I think you would love it to be honest.
Okay. Awesome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. Follow us on Instagram and YouTube at MoveYourBB. Please share with your friends. The best way to get this knowledge out there is for you guys to share this information. Thank you so much for your support and for listening. Check in next week for another episode.